This weekend, most high, the trees are pretty bare. Not a lot of leaves on them. And they seem perfectly okay with that. Some of us had some issues, diving a little too deep within, kind of stuck in our head. We met with some cool people doing cool things. We're re-editing a documentary. And in a timely time as this, a conversation about forgiveness with a good brother who was in the early stages of the Most High Show in 2017, Mark Goodman. So this episode might mess with you a little bit. It might touch you in places in your heart that you've been hiding. And that's okay, we're here for you. If you need help, you reach out to Mark, you reach out to me. You're worth it. Even if you are not a really motherfucker. This is Most High, baby.
People say forgive, but not forget.
I always think, choose one. Pick one. I don't care. Pick one. If I'm going to write off a debt, can you imagine going to your accountant and saying, I want to write off that debt? Okay, with whom? Well, you know, just them. How much? You know.
It doesn't matter.
You know? No, it is with this person, and it's $84.16. Are you completely done forgiving Mimi?
Right.
Right?
Mostly.
Mostly.
We'll see tomorrow.
Yeah. Those other things that triggered you along the way, all of a sudden they're not triggering you now?
No, right.
Isn't that beautiful?
Right.
And that's why when we hold up the carrot to hold up, if we're going to drop an F word here, it's not forgiveness, it's freedom.
Right? Damn, I thought he was going to cuss.
I know.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Most High Show. And today, this guest right here, it's really exciting because he was on the show in the early stages, way back when, in June of 2017. Let's give a round of applause and welcome Mark Goodman to the show. We got Kale co-hosting. Jolie is on the ones and twos.
What?
Leslie's doing quality control. Papa John's gave us the pizza. We paid for it, though. And we're going to be talking about a pretty powerful topic. So let me give you a proper intro here. Not forgiving someone can be poison to your mind, body, and spirit. Mark Goodman has experienced profound freedom from finding forgiveness for his abusive father and the trail of destruction that abuse left. With his nonprofit in full swing, a just released book, and a movie in the works, Mark is not just living in freedom, but doing everything he can to share the message and pathway to forgiveness. This is the Most High Show.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Mark, let's do this on the top, all right?
All right.
The name of your book is Forgiving a Good Man, an abuse survivor's story of freedom through forgiveness. So let's see what that book cover looks like. Jolie, you got a shot of that? Yeah. What's really cool, let's just get this out of the way, because what's really cool is in 2017 when you were on, you were working on a book, and you were working on it in this movie thing, and you were just in the beginning phases of the 70x7 path and all this stuff. And so it's really amazing to sit here and see you still on the path, still being obedient to what you feel like you needed to do, and you're still pushing, and now the book is out. So Congratulations, brother. That's big.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a long road.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. Yeah. Like, what took the book 6 years?
Well, a number of things happened, one of which was COVID, and everything slowed down. And a lot of it, too, I wanted to put it out when I knew it was time, it was ready. And so our board of our nonprofit, 70x7, that's 70x7.org, 70x7, we affectionately now call it internally 70x7x7, 7 years into it.
Yeah.
Right? And in that process, not just with my own story that I'd love to share tonight.
Yeah.
But also about learning the science of forgiveness. So last 3-4 years, been learning under the number one clinical psychologist, Dr. Everett Worthington. When I say he wrote the book on forgiveness, it would be understatement because he's written 16 books on forgiveness.
Wow.
With, like I say, hundreds of studies. And that in the coaching, what I've learned off the people, from the people that I've served, and they are serving me at the same time.
Yeah.
And so all of that pulled together with the story is how we can share it, how to forgive the unforgivable.
Yeah.
And that's why it took so long, is waiting for the time was right to get it right.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, hold on. I got a tech note. I want to make sure something's right.
Stand by.
Now's our time.
Keep the audience busy while Christian was steps away here. Nobody will notice. Big Daddy's bad.
I love it.
I'm liking that Big Daddy thing.
I love it. It fits, right?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Well, not as big as you were before, because I've seen you work, we work out at the same gym.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, that's my OCD. It's like when my brain starts cooking something, I gotta solve it so I can be here. So this book, it wasn't like it took you 6 years to write. So you had it wrote at the time, six years ago when we did the show, I think, right?
Just in my head, as far as the what I wanted to accomplish. And it actually, the final book is different from what I originally had in mind through the course of this.
Sure. Yeah.
Including which is one of the things that we do in the book that I did is after at the end of each chapter, for those who know what that means, breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah.
Okay, so taken out of the journey, so at the end of the chapter is take the reader is to what did I learn in that period of time? Because it was a long, hard path to forgiveness, of forgiving what I had to forgive.
Yeah.
And so share, and then take them back into the journey, and take them back to the journey.
Yeah.
And at the end of the book, turn to the reader and say, now it's your choice. Now, you know, I'm going to give away a little bit on the sense of the book now.
Yeah.
Is it does have a happy ending.
Oh.
It all worked out.
Well, you're here.
You're right.
Yeah. And so that process of writing a book, like a lot of people feel like they got a book in them. I know a lot of, I mean, we've heard stories on this show where it's like, whoa, you could write a book.
Yeah.
What did you do to go about that the technical process for you to write it? Did you learn from people? Did you talk to other authors? Or did you have a way of approaching it and writing it? Or did you just kind of start typing and go?
That's a great question. I'm glad you asked, because nobody's asked me that before. And really wanted to map out is, who's the audience? Who am I writing this for? And why?
Yeah.
Right? What is the purpose?
Because that clarifies what you write.
Absolutely it does. Yeah. Right? And this is not my story. This is my forgiveness journey. Right? There's a lot of crazy things in my life that has happened that are not included in this.
Yeah.
So I worked with another writer to work on the format, laying out the path and the map of it, and then just start then drilling in on those each components of the how we're going to take them. Think of it almost like if you're going to go to L.A., you don't just hop in your car and go, right? It literally mapped it all out and then filled it in along the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So it's a pretty technical process.
Yeah, it took over a year. I know a lot of writers can write a lot quicker than that. But again, it was more important not to be right, but to get it right.
Sure.
Lives are, in the past 7 years, we've seen untold numbers of lives change. And literally lives saved that are here today, that were going to take their own lives, that were carrying around so much resentment on them, pain, shame, blame, that... to me, it's not about selling books, number of books. It's about lives changed.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you got a story, you got to tell it, right?
Absolutely.
And those lives that you've touched, that's a little bit of what's going on through this, through the nonprofit, 70X7.
That's correct.
X7.
That's correct.
Yeah. So what's the big deal? Like forgiveness. What's the big deal?
Look, the big deal is we toss that word around so easily. You know, grace, hope, forgiveness. And it can be frustrating for me because it's used so much, but it's one of the most misunderstood, including which in church. So think of it this way. I had somebody tell me some time back that I was a salubrious person.
A what?
Yeah, I know. I did the same thing.
Yeah.
I didn't know whether to thank him or slap him.
Can you use it
head.
In a sentence?
I had to look it up.
Yeah.
It turns out it was a nice thing. But what the point being is a word that we don't know, we end up looking it up and trying to figure out what it means. A word that we've heard our entire life, we assume we know what it means and we go on with it. So what happens when you, do you remember when you were younger that your mom said to you, say, hey, go tell your brother you're sorry. I'm sorry. Okay. Were you really sorry? And was it really okay? Did it even the scales? And somehow or another, that exchange taught us what forgiveness was improperly. Mm. That we were taught that it's an exchange.
Mm.
And that's the biggest misunderstanding of forgiveness.
That's probably hard to begin to break down and crack when you're working one-on-one with someone.
Very much so. And what's painful is so often, some of the toughest people to crack through are those that are believers, that go to church.
Yeah.
See, why should I forgive them? They haven't repented.
Huh.
Right?
Yeah.
There's not an exchange. They didn't say that they were sorry. And think about how silly this is, just for a second. Let's take that aside. Just think how silly this is. That if you hurt me, I am saying that I can't be joyful. I can't have happiness. I can't be free until you, the very person who hurt me, fill in the blank, does something. In other words, what I'm saying is my future happiness is subject to the very person who victimized me, and so I choose to be a victim the rest of my life. How silly is that?
Yeah, it's being hurt twice.
Absolutely. And that's not on them. Now that's on you,
yeah.
Because you're leaving it up to them in order to find your happiness. Forgiveness is only one side of a two-sided transaction. It is subject to nothing. They don't have to be alive. They don't have to apologize. It is subject to nothing. And as soon as one starts to say, I will forgive them if, fill in the blank, when, fill in the blank, if only, fill in the blank, you missed it.
Now, you mentioned to be able to be a victim. There's something, like, we get something out of being a victim, right?
Absolutely.
What do you think we get out of being victims?
Well, one is blame.
Yeah.
Right? It gives a chance to blame. You know, blame looks to the past. Responsibility looks to the future, and it can be very tough to say, I will forgive. My oldest brother held onto his backpack of pain, shame, blame, anger, resentment until the day that he died. Why? Because that defined him. He was that victim. I am like this because. Victims are powerless. Victims have no control of their lives. Victims have an excuse for any kind of behavior. And so as holding on that victimhood, I get to say, I am like this. I can go back to abusing drugs and alcohol because fill in the blank.
Right.
Because I'm not responsible. But here's the thing is, one of my favorite people in blame, Brene Brown.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've
Atlas of the Heart. That's the same. That's the same writer, right? Okay.
Followed a lot of her work, and she says that the blame is the discharge of anger. When we're angry, when we're mad at us, them, God,
right?
We blame. Sometimes we blame others. Sometimes we blame ourselves. But blame is the discharge of anger. And blame continues that victim mentality.
Yeah. Well, you said something about victim, which it gives you permission to kind of do what there's a part of you that wants to do, which is...
That's correct.
Yeah. To escape, to get high, to live a life of irresponsibility or whatever, because you're like... And so that, I think, was a key piece for, especially, like, I think people who struggle with alcohol and drugs, that's a hard piece to let go of, because it was one of the key driving forces to being able to say, well, F it. Because this ain't working out, that ain't working out, this person didn't do this, and so F it. I'm just going to do what I want to do anyway.
That it offers a justification.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That blame justify that I can do whatever instead of taking that responsibility. And it comes, the heart of it is in the ability to forgive oneself and forgive others unconditionally.
Yeah. Unconditionally.
Unconditionally.
Yeah. Richard Rohr, have you heard of Richard Rohr, read any of his work? He's a Franciscan priest, my favorite, and he's wrote a lot of books. He wrote a book called Breathing Underwater about the 12 steps, and he's wrote a lot of stuff. And one of the things he says is that in the story of Jesus, that Jesus teaches us how to be victims. Because when Jesus is victimized, he doesn't come back going, hey, man, you know, you just left me up there, and y'all took off, and what the heck, and that wasn't cool, and you need to apologize. But he shows back up and goes, do you have anything to eat? Mm. You know, he shows right back up, right back in their homes, right back at the table with no blame, no giving of guilt. And he's teaching us how to be human, right? And how to let go and move on. I think that's a powerful kind of lens to look at the Jesus story that we don't usually hear, right?
And we don't take the time of actually forgive them for he knows not what they do.
Yeah.
Was it subject to?
Nothing, right?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Now, forgiveness, when we come to talking about the Lord, is often, now we're going to put it in that, is reconciliation. We're reconciled with God. That's a whole different ballgame. That takes both sides. That's saying, I'm sorry, I repent, I did bad, and I want relationship, right? And that takes two sides. Reconciliation, so we're reconciled with the Lord.
Yeah.
Forgiveness is part of reconciliation, but reconciliation is not part of forgiveness.
Yeah.
That is two sides of the transaction. That is a transaction. Forgiveness is not a transaction. It's not an exchange.
Yeah. So this kind of fits. People say forgive, but not forget.
Yeah. I always think, choose one. Pick one. I don't care. Pick one.
Okay. Tell me about that. What do you mean? Yeah.
Well, you don't get both. All right? And when we're talking about the big hurts, it's not even realistic to forget. Right? So many of your viewers, listeners, right? They've got some big hurts. Some really big hurts. And the idea when they hear forgive and forget is not realistic. And besides, if I'm going to write off a debt, can you imagine going to your accountant and saying, I want to write off that debt? Okay. With whom? Well, you know, just them. How much? You know.
It doesn't matter.
You know? No. It is with this person, and it's $84.16. So you actually have to have an accounting. And often, in my forgiveness, it's just the opposite. It not only not forget, but we are going to recall. It's one of the first steps. Mm-hmm. If you take a look in the 12th step, what is the fourth step, right? It's taking an accounting of it, right? It's actually, so if you're going to write off a debt, you have to have an accounting. And sometimes that's painful. When I went back to truly forgive my dad, I went back and interviewed my family members, former friends back in school, and I discovered it was worse than what I remembered.
Wow.
It was worse. There are things, whether I blocked them out, I have no idea what. So when I got serious about having my accounting, my fourth step, my willingness to write that off in that accounting, it hurt. It was very painful. But once I got all of that, I had my $84.16.
You knew what you were forgiving.
I knew what I was forgiving.
Yeah.
It's the exact opposite. If you want to do it well, that's some of the worst advice you can possibly get from anybody is forgive and forget.
Yeah.
Just the opposite.
Right. Now, I've experienced in working with guys is that they use that forgive but not forget, but it's like a way to not completely forgive. Have you ever experienced? Well, yeah.
No, explain that again. Just I think I'm with you, but what do you mean by that?
Like, it's like they'll say, well, I forgive them. I'm not going to forget about it. Yeah. And it's like something in the spirit of the way they say it or the tone or
it's
me
not
knowing
forgiving.
Them.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you're not forgiving them.
Right.
Because you're still holding on to it.
Right.
Right? That makes sense?
Yeah, sure. You're checking it off. We call it decisional forgiveness. It's only in your head. I'm trying to do it for me. It has nothing to do with you. It's just for me. Right? We often hear that advice, you know, you're doing it for you and not for them.
Yeah.
But then followed with, you know, I forgave him a long time ago. But if his house burnt down, it would serve him right.
Well, I'm stuck on this whole thing about, I mean, you mentioned it, but this whole conversation now, it's like, it's still serving me. Right. So like $18.16, whatever the number was, it's like that's a value. Right. And it's like this pain was worth this much. But now what I'm getting from it after. Right. Like this story, this narrative, this justification for my behavior, this false sense of power or control from having these like anger and all these things, like that has, you know, internal value sometimes. So it's like I want to get rid of this. But it's like, no, I use that every day. You know, it's like can become a part of you, I think.
Yeah, when I say that accounting, it is every little bit of the detail of what happened, but also what it caused and what were the consequences, right? Which brings up a good point. If you ever want to apologize to somebody, right, if you get those three things right, if you've ever been on the receiving end of it, it's amazing, it's awesome. It really is. The three parts, what happened, what it caused, and the consequences. Hey, I'm sorry I hit you with a bat. I'm really sorry I broke your arm. And you know that golf tournament that you wanted to go to? That's on me. Yeah. So listen, I'm sorry I used and abused for so long. And I am sorry that all the pain that it caused you of worrying and of the love that you have for me and that pain. And I know that probably it's going to take a while for you to trust me, and I've got to earn that trust back again. What happened? What did it cause and the consequences? And that's a full accounting of not just what happened.
Right. Yeah.
If you can get that right, that will shake your world into freedom found in forgiveness.
Yeah. That reminds me of a ninth step I did, which ninth step is the amends process, going and mending relationships or, you know, owning your part or whatever it is. And I wrote, my sponsor had me write out the what I was going to say. And one of the things that he did, he said, well, you're assuming here what you did, what it caused to them, right? You're assuming that it affected them this way and that way. Don't assume what it did. Just own your part. And at that, the way that it worked for me was with my mother. And the way it worked for me was I first began to reconcile that relationship first to where I was talking to her more often, creating more of a bond. We were talking more often, and the road was a little clearer, right? So that when I sat down, what I realized I had to own was in my own recovery. In the years I was sober, what I did is I held her at arm's length because of unforgiveness, right? Like because I didn't forgive her, I just kept her far away emotionally and mentally, and I know that caused her harm. Right. And so I had to rework that writing to say to own what I did and then leave her to the space to respond. Which she was like, well, and you also, which is fine.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So I was like, okay. Yeah.
But if you think about it, the reason you're doing that is for your side of the transaction. How they respond in the other has little to do with it. Right.
Yeah.
What you're doing is learning how to forgive yourself. Right. So that. And look, there's actually some great studies on this. So 5 of the 12 steps in the program are directly related to forgiveness.
Okay, which one?
5 of the 12, 4, 5, 6, 8, and 9. Now, 4, 5, and 6 really have to do, 8, 9, and more about having make amends. 4, 5, and 6 is really more letting myself off the hook in a simplest form, right?
Yeah.
So I'm taking an accounting and I'm taking myself off the hook. But here's the thing is, in the last 10 years, some amazing studies on this, that if you do one or the other, it has very little impact on those who abuse drugs and alcohol. If you let yourself off the hook without making those amends, or you make the amends without letting yourself off the hook. However, if you do them both, the results are mind-boggling of the improvement of staying sober and staying clean.
Yeah.
Which is amazing that these studies have just been done in the last 10 years. And Bill W. wrote that, what, in the late 30s?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
In the late 30s. Mm-hmm. And it's scientifically proven to be correct if you're trying to stay clean and sober.
Yeah, because there's something about the when you let yourself off the hook, and then but you still are owning that what you did have a causality, like cause and effect. Like you did this, and it affected people, right? And that's
Forgiving yourself is just one of the tough ones, right?
Yeah,
it's one of the toughest ones. You know, we've talked back in going back to 2017, right? What we call the Big Four.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Trying to, the Big Four being forgiving somebody who's done you wrong, right? Asking for forgiveness, I did you wrong.
Right.
Forgiving yourself, and the fourth one few people want to talk about, and that is being mad at God, right? I'm blaming God.
Yeah.
And so the forgiving yourself, the reason it's the toughest one, because remember, forgiveness is one side of a two-sided transaction. It's not subject to reconciliation. Forgiving yourself, you're the offender and you're the offended. And it's probably, call me wrong here, probably a good idea to reconcile yourself.
Yeah.
And what happens if you can't reconcile yourself, you find ways to escape.
Yeah.
And it could be drugs, it could be alcohol, it can suicide, depression. It shows up in all sorts of different ways. So how do you, as the offender and the offended, all those same rules still apply.
Yeah.
It's just tougher because you're having to do both sides, and reconciliation is always tougher. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So when someone's in this, like say you're sitting with somebody, and that's one component to what you do and what you've been continuing to do these years is sitting with other people at coffee shops or on Zoom, I'm sure, and just really diving in and helping people come to forgiveness. People are really struggling with this. What do you find are the things that help in that self-forgiveness? Like, are there practices or mantras or jump up and down three times in one leg or something? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's the three times in one leg. It's fabulous.
Yeah, foolproof.
Yeah, it's absolutely great. Because it can be one of the toughest. So there's not one path to forgiveness, right? It's all different. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of factors. We won't have to go into it right now, but really, it starts off almost like the 12 steps. Is how bad do you want it? Like, you're not ready to stop drinking? You're not stop using? Go out there. When you're ready, you hit bottom, enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so it all starts off as, if you've been carrying that anger, that resentment long enough, if you haven't, I get it. And I'll be the first one to defend you. I held down my backpack for a long time, right?
Yeah.
They have a problem with you, you haven't come to see me. I got your back on this, right?
Yeah.
And I really mean that. But at some point, your shoulder's getting tired, right? Is it causing enough relationship issues? Is it causing you to keep on using and abusing? And if so, how badly do you want it? And it all starts off of there. Do you really, really want it badly enough? And my life is unmanageable. I'm tired of carrying this around another day.
Yeah.
But then it just starts off with, then is next step is actually judgment. Is what I like to call judgment detox, right? Judgment detox. We judge ourselves. I can't believe I did this. I can't believe I did that.
Constantly.
Yeah. Sound familiar?
Yeah.
I mean, how many meetings have you been at where you've heard that? Mm. And so until you can break the chains of the past, we can't move forward. Listen, I've been dealing with a lady for the last couple months. Her own family put her in sex trafficking.
Jesus.
Her own family. And I'm not going to get into here, when I say sex trafficking, you think of one thing. No, this was far worse.
Mm.
And if you can imagine the anger and the resentment and the rage, and she ended up using and abusing needles. She's clean now. But she's one of my hardest workers of judgment detox, is we're going to break the chains of the past, right? We are not going to go after them. We're going to let the judge, the law, take care of that. You're not. We're going to break those chains, and then we can move forward.
Yeah.
And that is amazing, of breaking that chain so that she can forgive herself and forgive others so that she can be free.
Yeah. So it's kind of, it's like you're doing a couple things at the same time, right? By the forgiving others, it's also helping you to forgive yourself.
That is correct. And then just treat it like yourself. Almost as though I'm, you know, a schizophrenic. Hey, Mark, I just want to say I'm really sorry for what I did, what it caused, and those consequences.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark. Yeah. I forgive you for what you did, what you caused, and those consequences. And when I look in the mirror now, and look, if the audience, if you look on your table there, I think I have one over here, a little mirror.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And the reason I hand out those mirrors is if only we can see ourselves the way that God sees us, fully righteous, right? God gave him who had no sin to be sin for us so that we are the righteousness of God. And we look at ourselves and we see every little dent, every little scar, every little bit. And you did this last week. I did that last summer. I did that, and I'm holding on to that. So if we can look at ourselves in the mirror and say, you know what?
Yeah.
You're all right.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
You want to trip yourself out and just go into the mirror and just go like, I love you.
Oh, man.
It's weird, dude. Start talking to, but really make eye contact and really start talking to yourself.
I write about that in the book.
Oh, do you?
It's in there. No, I didn't do that. It's what I learned. I went to this seminar and I got into the mirror every morning, first thing in the morning, because your mind is still somewhat semi-conscious because you're really not trying to talk to your conscious mind. You're trying to reprogram your subconscious mind. Mm. So that first couple minutes when you first wake up is the best time to reprogram your mind. Mm. So I get up in the mirror, get up, get in the mirror. I like myself, I like myself, I like myself.
Begrudgingly.
I like myself, I like myself, I like myself, I like myself.
Yeah.
And it took a long time.
Yeah.
I wish I could tell you it was a fast road.
Yeah.
But full, you know what? I like myself.
Full disclosure, I literally had to do, I wrote down I am statements in my phone before I came in here. I just was like, okay, let me, it's been a weird week and past 2 weeks, a lot of changes and a lot of just mental instability. And I was like, what am I? I'm playing this, I'm stuck in this victim thing, right? For a myriad of reasons, but it's like snap out of it. Like, you know, things aren't as bad as I want them to be sometimes. Like, and I say that, like, it sounds crazy, but really, like, my whole life has been, you know, a mess, right? For, and then good for short periods of time. And it's like, I'm hitting that point where it should be bad again, right? And so, there's all these signals going like, hey, things are, it's bad, bad, oh, danger, danger, you know? And so Christian actually told me something at work the other day, you know, some positive things. And hearing that in that moment, I was like, you don't really believe that. And I'm like, wait, I believed that at one point. So like, what's this whole thing? So I was thinking about forgiveness and say I forgive you for something you did to me, right? And I'm relieved and, A, does that ever come back, like those past feelings, right? And then I think about the maladjustments that trauma or abuse or whatever, like this is how I show up now for my past and the way I was hurt. Do those go away after forgiving? And, you know, do they come back over time? Or?
Seriously, I really love that. I wish I could tell you it completely goes away. It would be a total lie, right? We have wounds.
Yeah.
And those, by closing that up, you have scars. And sometimes those scars hurt, and they come back from time to time, right? I'm the forgiveness guy, and I deal with it, it comes back in. The whole point about this is really two items, is reprogram your subconscious mind so you feel that way. And when it does come back, you know how to deal with it better. If you think about it, we act and we react on how we feel, not how we think, right? If I'm only forgiving Big Daddy over here, right?
For me.
He loves that.
I know, I love it too. Oh, you got me started. Right? When you, a smell, a song, go to a particular place, it triggers me, right? Mm-hmm. We know triggers. You guys know triggers?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? It triggers.
Yeah.
And because that's how we feel. If you can reprogram so that I feel, and I'm doing it not just for me, I'm doing it as a gift for my offender. All right? That's what it's for. It's forgiving. Oh, imagine that. It's forgiving.
Wow.
And done well, if you do it for your offender as well as it is for you, that rumination that goes over and over again, you'll see it slip away. those triggers that triggered you before, all of a sudden now become milestones on your progress. All of a sudden, I didn't get triggered by that.
Yeah.
What was that all about?
Yeah.
But it really comes into is that if you can change in how you feel about it, not just how you think, it's called moving from decisional forgiveness to emotional forgiveness. There's actually different levels of forgiveness.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's making me think of the difference of, I mean, this was just my experience, that there was a clear distinction between forgiving and then healing from the pain that was caused. And I think the forgiveness came first, and I do think there was levels to that forgiveness. And thinking about like my relationship with my mom, right? Like, I forgave her. I wouldn't have been able to stay sober and have a semblance of a life if I didn't let that go, right? At some level. But then the pain and the domino effect of what I forgave was that was the mess I had to clean up.
Yeah.
And that took longer years for me. Because you're thinking, I did this 9-step thing, you know, year for last, right? I've been sober 12 years. So it took me a long time to get to that place where, and I'll tell you, in French, we call our grandmothers mémé. So she was mémé on my phone, grandma. And it wasn't until year for last I changed her name to mom. It took me that long to really, like, heal from that and the abandonment and the issues and all that stuff. I had forgiven her and understood, and I got kids and a family and I get it. You know what I mean? Like, shoot, I like to disappear too, dog, you know? But healing from it was a totally different thing for me. I found that they were different. How do you address that? How do you talk about that? And
sure. William P. Young, the author of The Shack, who had a very abusive father, said it took him 50 years to get the face of his father off the face of Jesus.
Wow.
My heavenly father. And I had a father that was not only physically abusive to my three older brothers, but he was sexually abusive to his own boys. It left some pretty deep scars, some really big scars. And sometimes the days those scars even hurt.
Yeah.
And so there are days, am I completely done forgiving? No. I'll be working on that till the day that I die. But when I see a picture of my dad, I smile now, right? I'm happy.
Yeah.
So it is a path to forgiveness. Are you completely done forgiving Mimi?
Right. Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Right?
Mostly.
Mostly.
We'll see tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But those other things that triggered you along the way, all of a sudden they're not triggering you now?
No, right.
Isn't that beautiful?
Right.
And that's why when we hold up the carrot to hold up, if we're going to drop an F word here, it's not forgiveness, it's freedom. Right?
Damn, I thought he was going to cuss.
I know. Big Daddy had me going there. Look, if you're going to hold up the carrot, come on. Do you want some forgiveness?
But freedom,
no.
Though.
Do you want some freedom? Yeah.
But do we know what freedom, like, I guess I can kind of picture freedom, right, in my mind.
What's the image you get? What image, if you, like?
The ocean, the waves.
What do you get?
Just being able to go without pain and being dragged around the chain and the backpack that I had carried around for most of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My shoulders don't hurt.
Yeah.
And here's the thing is the shame. I suffered tremendously for not being worthy. If you knew the real Mark, you wouldn't like him. Right? And so now it's like I'm just raw and transparent as can be. What you see is what you get.
Yeah.
Why? Because I can look in the mirror. I like Mark. So now I can show you the real Mark. You know, I spent most of my life not sharing with anybody. We were in a small group. My wife and I started a new small group back in 2014. And the first guy up, this back when you share your story, the first guy up, he told everything. When I say everything, I mean, it was like, I was blown away. In my time, 2 weeks, my time to tell my story. Oh, I was obsessed, thinking about it, praying about nothing. Finally I said, enough is enough. Mm. That's it. So I got a hold of my wife and I said, honey, you better come in the kitchen and sit down. This stuff happened to me and how I feel and think. I've not shared with anybody, including you, and I don't want you to hear it in somebody else's living room for the first time.
Wow.
Blah. and it's never stopped since. And once I took her off that mask, it's like, you know what? Yeah, dense flaws, got all sorts of things, right? But I like myself. And it was that forgiving of myself, it changed, it rocked my world, all my relationships with my wife, with my daughters, including with God.
So that's the freedom.
That was free.
Yeah.
I was free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I want everybody else is to feel what that's like, is that levels of forgiveness, it's hard, maybe hard to comprehend, but the freedom is so worth it. All that work of having to do that accounting, of healing up that wound, because like, if you hurt me, right, it causes a big wound. If I don't close that up again,
yeah,
just, then it's on me. That wound of unforgiveness will affect and infect everything in my body, and that's what I experienced it, and it showed up mostly in relationships, that wound of unforgiveness.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about what's in the book, without giving it away, but it's in the title, right? An Abuse Survivor's Story of Freedom Through Forgiveness. And you know, I think there's a lot of us have that in our past, right? I have it in my past. A lot of people have it. A lot of people blocked it out, you know, but a lot of people don't want to talk about it. And so I think it's important that you're talking about it openly, you know. So how did you deal with that?
Yeah, so, you know, the basis of the book is, my path to forgiveness. Because as a teenager, I lived homeless in the streets of L.A., eating out of dumpsters and soup lines. And so if any of your listeners are need to eat out of a dumpster, have them come see me. There is actually an art form to it.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm telling
you, next book.
Oh. Yeah. How to eat out of dumpsters.
Yeah. I'm telling you guys, there's this grocery store in Malibu, the stuff they threw away. Don't feel sorry. It was amazing. It was so good.
Yeah, hit a Trader Joe's. That's what you need to do. Yeah.
Fabulous. But anyways, the reason I have good memories of it, because it was actually better, it was safer than what I had growing up in Detroit. Not that, you know, Detroit is not exactly a safe place, but it was inside the walls of my house. And as I shared just a little bit with before, father was, mom and dad, both alcoholic. And my dad, as soon as he had that first drink, look out. It was
switched.
Total switch.
Yeah.
And so I had bumper stickers on my bedroom door to, not for decorations, but to hide the holes in it where different family members come at me with a bat or a knife. Mm. And like I say, my dad sexually abused his own boys. So yeah, it was a step up, as bad as living in the streets of LA can be. But here's the thing is, those wounds that I left behind, my three older brothers, one passed away a few years ago, full of anger, resentment that we talked about before, right? I'm a victim, I am not gonna let this go.
Yeah,
I'm like this because. And with us four boys, it's almost like a modern day parable of the different ways that people handle unforgiveness. Because my next oldest brother put complete walls around himself. Schizophrenic, lives in a special home in St. Pete, no friends. I'll wake up in the morning, have 12 emails, and we interchange. I'm the only one to contact, and I'm taking care of most of my life. A life that nobody wants to live. Mm-hmm. And then my middle brother, the one who led me to the Lord and taught me business, escaped with drugs, alcohol, porn, until he finally made the ultimate escape while on the phone call. He took his own life while on the phone call with me.
Wow.
Now, on his death certificate, it says suicide. But I know, now you guys know, it really should read unforgiveness. He died of unforgiveness.
Yeah.
And so how do you work through it? And here I am, guys. You know me. I'm one of the happiest, most joyful guys that you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
Right? Why? Freedom.
Yeah.
That is the amazing joy and the ability, but it takes a choice. It takes saying enough is enough. They don't owe me another thing. My dad at age 65, he did finally sober up later in life, turned his life over to God. In the last 23 years of his life, he's no longer with us. Turned into one of the most wonderful, godly men you've ever met. I'm telling you, if you had spent time with him before he passed away, you'd be calling baloney on my story. There's no way this guy equals this story, and that's correct, because you're never too old. You've never done too much bad to find God's redemption, grace, and forgiveness. Mm. Now, we did reconcile, and we had a wonderful time together. And my dad ended up apologizing to me. He did. About 7-8 years into sobriety, this is how it went down. We're watching TV. Commercial comes on. He turns the volume off, and he turns to me. He says, "Hey, Mark, if there's anything I did while you were a child, I just want to say I'm sorry." Now, guys, is that the wimpiest apology? Hey, Big Daddy, I owe you $12,000. Here's $7.
Yeah,
okay?
Right.
Like, it'll get you more mad.
Yeah.
And that also is like a parable. If we're waiting for the apology, it's never enough because in our mind, what they've done to us, they need to pay for this. And it's never enough. And you know what my response was to him? "Hey, Dad, we're good. Turn the volume back up." And I meant every bit of it. And it wasn't until the following morning, it's like, wow, what happened? My dad finally apologized. And I didn't. Why? Because I had forgiven him subject to nothing. You know, I wasn't waiting for the apology.
Right.
Yeah.
That, guys, is where I found my freedom. Yeah. My dad is one who taught me that nothing is unforgivable.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, hearing those stories, it's like, it's so unfair, right? To survive abuse, to survive these things that people do, and whether, you know, you can explain away their actions or not, but to survive all that and then be dealt and then be handed the card to go, now you get to forgive them. It's like, come on.
Why do they deserve it?
It's why do they deserve it, and why do I got to do this work, and hasn't my life been hard enough?
It's not fair.
It's, yeah, right.
It's not even, it's not good for society, right? Oh, yeah, I got a long list of them. Yeah. Keep going.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And so if it does. It feels like, okay, now I got to go through this forgiveness thing. Why would I want to do that, you know? And especially if someone's not aware of what unforgiveness is causing them.
Bingo. That I'm still in the chains for what they did, and I'm going to allow them to keep me in those chains because of all those list of things you just gave me. It's not good for society. They don't deserve it. They don't. And so I'm going to keep myself in chains all for those reasons. Yeah. God bless you, brother. If you like that pain that much, you just keep going. But you have a choice.
Yeah.
You can be free, but it's subject to
nothing.
Thank you. Big Daddy's got a winner. We got a winner. Ding, 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 ding. Okay, somebody out there in the audience, give this man a prayer.
I'm glad this isn't Jeopardy. I'd be...
Okay. Let's see here. Oh, this. I want to talk to you about this verse in Matthew.
Okay.
And I don't know that you hear it quoted very often because it's pretty hardcore. And this is Jesus talking. This is red letters. For if you forgive other people when they sin against you, your heavenly Father. This is right after the Lord's Prayer.
Okay.
So they're like, and he goes, teach you how to pray. And then he goes, now he talks about this. For if you forgive other people when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive others their sins, your Father will not forgive your sins. Have you spent any time with this verse?
Sure. Let's think about it. First of all, there's this confusion, right? In order to be forgiven, I need to be forgiving. And how many of us are truly forgiving completely, yet we're supposed to be forgiven for our sins? So I got this picture. If you take that right by the letter of the law, I'm going to get up to heaven. I probably wouldn't under those circumstances. But I get up there, and there's going to be like two people there, right? Because we can't live up to that. And if you take a look at the Sermon on the Mount that that's based on, he gives us a whole list of things that we can't live up to, and part of which is to realize that we can't live up to these things, that it is about our faith in God and our trust in God. But also, that's under the old covenant. Let me ask you this. When Jesus said those words to those people, how many people in the audience had all their sins forgiven because Christ Jesus had died on the cross?
Right.
How many of them?
Right.
Oh, that would be a big fat zero, because let me end up there talking. Okay.
Yeah.
So they're still under the old covenant. They're still under the Jewish covenant. Got it?
Yeah.
So when the rules change, when Christ died on the cross, our forgiveness is not subject to being forgiving. Now, it's still good. He's given great words of advice here, right?
Yeah.
To be forgiven. And I still believe that it's very much true that he wants us to see go that direction. But it is not a subject to.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah, I think of that verse as, you know, when you hold this unforgiveness in your heart, you're not going to receive forgiveness from others or from a divine, benevolent creator who kicks forth the creation, right? Because your heart space is not in the space. It's kind of like you can't really enter into the kingdom of heaven unless you kind of want to be in the kingdom of heaven, right? But if you're happy out here in the wild, then just stay in the wild. So if you're harboring this unforgiveness, you're not going to be accessing the flow or the rhythm because you're holding on to this thing. So it's like to speak to like the freedom, right? So to me, like, that's the wisdom in it. I like what you said, though. I never considered about it being kind of who he's talking to at that time. Mm. But I like how thinking of it as the advice is, don't, if you're holding on to unforgiveness, then you're not going to be receiving the forgiveness. Because so you're not in the place of heart space to do it.
I'm sorry, Big Dad. I'm going to challenge you on this one.
Let's do it.
Okay?
Yeah.
That here on earth, right?
Yeah.
When we're talking horizontal, but when we're talking vertical, right? If you're a believer, a true believer in the Lord, it's wiped out. There's justification, just as if it never happened.
Yeah.
Romans 8:1, now therefore there is no condemnation, not right. some. There is no condemnation,
yeah.
right? So it's none, zero, zip, yeah. zilch.
Unless you give yourself condemnation.
So that's, again, it is horizontal. If you're a yeah. true believer, and when we're talking with Lord, you go up there, at, right? And it's like, I don't have anything here. I don't have, right? I don't know what you're talking about here.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
So it does affect us very much, and that's why I like to use it under those circumstances.
Yeah.
Is that between us? Yes, it's hard to be forgiven. We love to receive mercy. Oh, we're slow to give it.
Yeah.
Well, back up a little bit to the Lord's Prayer. How often we say, forgive us our debts, only to mumble through the next part, forgive us our debtors.
Yeah, yeah. right.
Forgive us our trespasses.
As we forgive those.
We forgive those. Forgive
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. yeah.
And so that's really the way that I see that.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about the letter of the law, as far as the Lord is concerned, no, you're forgiven, period, end of story.
Yeah.
Non-negotiable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, when we're talking about as far as horizontal now, that furthermore, if you go to like 1 Peter 3:9, where don't repay evil with evil so that you will receive a blessing.
Yeah.
Right? And so we're not talking, again, a blessing that you're going to get a better, bigger tent than I'm going to get.
Right.
right? Which... what we're talking about is the blessing here on earth with freedom, yeah. joy, happiness, yeah. relationship. And so there is a blessing if we can get this right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. As we're kind of landing the plane here, what I'd like to know is, what did you personally do how did you cope with life when you were in unforgiveness? What were your coping mechanisms? Because for a lot of us, we're all, you know, we got to go to meetings and talk to people and we got to do all kinds of stuff. What is it that you used to cope, and what do you find are the common, like, devious things that we do to cope with harboring unforgiveness?
So especially when we're talking about like abuse, and my situation is so many, and not limited to only abuse, because it can affect you physically in all sorts of different ways. Your health, it's amazing. Fibromyalgia, some 80% of fibromyalgia patients were abused as a child. It's amazing the connection between the wow. wound of unforgiveness and your physical ability.
Yeah.
So, but what I did is I was always great at wearing a mask. Right, I'm not worthy, and it's exhausting for any of you that know this one all too well. Wake up in the morning, I do not, you know, I'm mad, I'm angry, I don't like myself. Figure out that mask, put it on. Hey, how you doing? Good
yeah.
to see you. How are you? Good to see you. And it's exhausting by the end of the day, and putting that down, living that lie. And so often, live that lie. What happens is you go through waves of overcompensation and withdrawal. Often drugs, alcohol, mm-hmm. overcompensating, right? I'm going to do all this work. That's why often you see some of the best actors, comedians, CEOs. It's amazing the CEOs that I meet with that would blow your mind if you knew their real story. Church leaders overcompensate because why? I'm not worthy, right? I'm holding all this in. I'm not worthy, so I'm going to overcompensate in other areas. Yeah. Only to withdraw again and overcompensate, withdraw. If you have somebody close to you that's overcompensated, you can see that overcompensation, withdraw, pull them off the sides. I love you, brother. There's something you got there. I'm your friend. This won't go anywhere. Let's talk.
Hmm. Yeah.
Let's get that mask off. Now, remember now, shame, three things it needs. It needs silence, it needs judgment, and it needs unforgiveness. Silence, judgment, unforgiveness.
That's what shame needs to exist.
You take that away, it can't exist.
Say them again one more time.
Silence, keep it in the dark, keep that mask on. I'm not going to tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
No. Right? Judgment, what I did was wrong. It was really wrong. I abused for way too long.
Yeah.
And then unforgiveness, I can't forgive myself. You get rid of those, and shame, I promise you, cannot exist. Wow. I talk about it in the sense of, I've been sexually abused my life and I had a bad meal at Chili's last week. Does Chili's, that other thing? No, let me tell you about Chili's. Oh, come on, Chili's.
Can you imagine sitting across the table and just you and him? Yeah. Dude, that would be a trip.
Yeah, it can't exist.
Yeah.
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 I promise.
Yeah. That's powerful, man.
But the mask, that's the biggest thing. People just, you think you're fooling everybody, and it's like secondhand smoke. You think it's not hurting everybody else, and I promise you it is.
Oh, yeah. I used to think people didn't know I was on cocaine.
Yeah.
It was like everyone knew.
Everybody knew.
Cocaine.
How about that mask?
No, they don't know. They don't know I'm on it. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no. They all knew. I was like, I'm struggling with drugs. Yeah, dude, we know. We've been around you. We are clear on that. Yeah, and I guess it's like those are the small things that we'll pick up on people, right?
Yeah.
And I think probably my judgment mind will first judge them. Oh, that guy's. But I think what you're convicting me of right now as we're talking is going, when I get that judgment mind's going, oh, that's not my people or whatever, it's maybe think, oh, that person has, they're holding on to unforgiveness. They're hiding something within. And so they're playing this, they're projecting this role to the world and they're freaking exhausted.
Mm. Real quick, I'd love to share this quick story. I had a book launch event a week or two ago with Forgiving a Good Man.
Do it, baby.
Got to pitch in one more time. But this young lady stood up for the first time to share her story. I met her almost 3 years ago. I was called into a meeting. A local church had done her wrong, not going to name the church or what happened. But a friend asked me to sit in the meeting. So I just said, okay. I'm driving down there and thinking, I've never been to this church before. I've never met this young lady. And I don't even know what the issue is. What in the world am I doing coming here? So I sat in the meeting, and she shared how she had been hurt before growing up and what they did. And everybody heard that, and we're going to handle it. And they did a great job. And they're walking away. I said, can I talk to you for just a minute? She said, yes. I said, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sorry if I am. But I truly sense you're seriously about to take your own life right now. In fact, you think your daughter will be better off, not worse, if you do.
Wow.
That's pretty bold.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really bold. Burst out crying. We sat there for 2 hours, and she shared a story that I wouldn't trade mine in a heartbeat for anything for that.
Wow.
And here she is, you know, 2.5 years later, engaged to be married, happy, got a wonderful job, full of joy. Mm. Overcompensation, the withdrawal, all the signs were there. Could read between and listen between the lines. If you mm-hmm. just listen well enough when people talk, be amazing what they're telling you, not necessarily in the words.
Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. So as we close, one thing we always ask someone who's sitting in the decadent seat of service, which is where you're sitting, we ask for you to look at your camera here and to just, for the person who's out there who is struggling with this, struggling with unforgiveness, what would you tell them?
I get it. I promise you, I get it. And I will affirm that. And if you want to spend the next day, week, year, the rest of your life carrying around that anger and resentment. I get it. But are you tired of it? Is enough enough? Are you tired of that anger and that resentment and ruminating over and over again about that hurt? And do you feel as though they don't deserve it? And you're right, they don't. But you do. You do. And so my offer to you is that there is freedom for you. There is freedom. That freedom is found in forgiveness. That's my appeal to you.
Amen. Well yeah. said, brother. Thank you so much for being here. Is there anything...
This has been kind of mind-blowing, a lot of the stuff. It's like, I feel like it's things that I should know or knew at one time, like internally from just experiences, but hearing it and hearing how you've navigated through it all, and I feel like I've got a busy year ahead of me next year.
Look, let's not kid you. I'm still working at it, and often...
It's a forever thing.
It's forever. If you've ever tried to walk up a down escalator, you know how it feels, okay? If you do nothing, you fall right back down again. Mm. Do just enough, you stay where you're at. And it takes a lot of work, but it's worth it, and that's my appeal to it, is I work at it every single day. Don't think that I'm there because of what I've been through or that I got all this information. Mm-hmm. I work at it every single day.
Sure.
Yeah. It's what motivates you to be, it's the 12th step, right? It's about, you know, we go back and we're helping other people and we shall not, you know, shut the door on the past. You know, we don't regret it, but we use it as a tool now to help others. And it's just, like you said, for being wrote so long ago that there was some divine inspiration there clearly, because that's the thing that makes it work. You know, because when you isolate, oh yeah, you get better, but you're not actually helping. And that's a key thing. I think, like, I find more people in recovery are miserable because they're not active in giving back. And they just don't get it. And for me, it's all those opportunities. I've never once wanted to help somebody, just be 100% honest. But I always do when the opportunity comes. And at the end, I'm always glad I did it. But I've never been like, oh boy, let's go and pick up this guy and take him to detox. That sounds freaking great in the middle of a Tuesday. Let's do it. But I do it. And so I think, like, seeing you and you living in this and then being in those situations, like with that lady, and to clearly see it and to be able to call it out, it's like, man, that's some of the work, right? Isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's beautiful, it's brother.
Yeah, I am. By the way, I'm still an addict. I'm addicted to helping people. I'm having a bad day. I got to go out and get a fix.
Yeah, yeah.
No one feels sorry for you for that
one. Oh, okay, all right. I love it. That's my love language, doing it for others.
Yeah. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all the donors and supporters who make the Most High Show, Most High Media possible. We have 150 recovery stories, 18 documentaries, TV shows. This episode is going to be on the app. And we're just looking forward to continuing to grow and continuing to build. Thank you for the in-studio audience for hanging out. And thank you, Mark, brother.
Thanks, Mark.
Appreciate you guys.
Peace. Thank you.